Okay. Today, this afternoon, we are here now going to talk about exteriorization. Why don't you try it sometime? The problem to be solved in exteriorization is a very simple one. You have to solve the problems which determine, or make the pre-clear determine, that mass is wonderful, and that he has to have terminals with which to operate if you have any difficulty with exteriorization. The pre-clear first felt degraded when he contacted and interiorized in a piece of mist. He first felt degraded when this occurred. And this is the heaviest degradation there is on the bank, entrance to the messed universe. Degradation is simply powerlessness. It's just an extremity of powerlessness, that's all. Somebody feels degraded, he feels powerless, and that's all. Let's not read any deeper significance into it and say why he is degraded, or naturally it would be the case if so and so and so and so and long and drawn out. No, he feels degraded because of a loss of power, which is loss of the ability to create energy. When a person has become to depend upon something else to create energy for him, when he depends upon this, then it, of course, stops creating energy, and so does he. He stops first, depending on something else to create the energy, then it stops. Because naturally, the only thing that's creating energy is himself. Sometimes it takes him a long time to find this out. He's getting less and less and less energy. He's getting running down, he says. He ought to have a rest. For lots of reasons. Why? Truth of the matter is he set up something to create energy for him, and then thereafter depended on it more and more and more and more, and of course his power was all that it was using for power all the time. Get that little hooker. The only power being furnished anywhere around there was being furnished by himself. The GE does not furnish any power to the Thetan. The only power being furnished was by himself, but he, in other words, became more and more covert. His lines to furnish this power became more and more circuitous and more hidden from him. And he could say all the time, more and more and more, he could say, well, I'm depending on it, and it is furnishing me power. He's furnishing himself power via it. So when he stops creating power, it stops creating power, and he has no power. You see that? Now, this appears at first glance to be a little bit unreasonable with relationship to the meshed universe, whereas we see very, very well that an individual goes down the road in a car, and it is burning gasoline, which we know very well was laid down as a deposit in the earth by lots of fishes who became compressed and decayed and all that sort of thing. And we know all this completely, and we know all this perfectly, and this is a fact, and this is a reason. Only thing wrong with it is that isn't what happened. Even though you have the deposit that makes the gasoline that puts into the tank of your car that burns the car, and even though you are depending on the car to pull the body around and all that sort of thing, the moment you have lost sight of the fact that you're just playing a rather complex game with yourself, you lose the power the car can furnish you. Now, I'm not going to tell you to this extremity that the day you depend entirely on the gasoline running your car, the car's going to stop. I'm going to tell you the day you start that you have totally depended on nothing but gasoline, the car is going to stop. So don't go off the wheels and think I'm saying something unreasonable. Don't get lost to that one. Now, I hate to have to tell you this because it gives so many ins and so forth to the field of mysticism and so on. And a lot of guys get dreaming up and imagining things about it and so forth. Do you know all this ridge energy you've got hanging around? Well, every doggone one of these ridges and every darn one of these automatic machines and all these deposits of energy and that sort of thing, you've got because you know you can't have the real thing. a mock-up. And what the Thetan considers theta energy to himself, he has because he can't have the real McCoy, according to him. You've got that. I mean, he can't have the real McCoy, according to him. It's rather silly. I mean, think about it. He obviously has all these terminals and all this energy and all this saved up this and that and so forth. Well, that's all very well. That's all very well. But it is a substitute. And where you read on brands of food, accept no substitutes and so forth, that's an awfully good model for the thing. But he couldn't have a woman. So he's carrying a mock-up of a woman. Well, he had to have a woman in the first place, and he didn't have to have one, and it gets involved that way. But anyway, he's carrying a mock-up of a woman. So if you just add it up every time, well, he's got a scarcity of them. Now, that's a substitute for a scarcity of women, not just a scarcity of one particular woman. If he's got a ridge, that's a scarcity of manufactured energy. If you just mock it up that way, if he's got a ridge, scarcity of manufactured energy. If he's carrying around a mass of applause or sexual sensation in the bank or something of the sort, well, he's carrying it around because he's got a scarcity of it. Fellow has a lot of facsimiles, even mean, brutal ones, like electronics and so forth, and they get into restimulation all the time. Then you figure out, well, he must have depended on them sometime or another, and he depended on them more and more, and now he's surreptitiously furnishing stuff to him, and that's the one way he can have electrical energy back is to put it into an electronic facsimile and feed it back to himself, and that's what he's doing, and he isn't doing anything more complicated than that. An individual who has facsimiles popping up in front of his face all the time is putting them there by circuitous circuits, which he himself has forgotten about and is no longer responsible for. This is a facsimile. An individual can take a facsimile simply by resisting a solid object. You get the idea, for instance, of resisting one of those ashtrays. All right, now look up above the ashtray. Got another ashtray? Let's get the idea now. Let's really resist something that's a little bit interesting to resist. And let's all look up at that lamp overhead there. Now let's resist it. Let's put it back in its place. Let's conceive a dislike for it and put it back in its place. Now, let's put it back in its place again. Now, let's get how hard it's pushing. The son of a gun. Get how hard it's pushing. How mean this is of it to push. Now, look at some other part of the room. Now, close your eyes. Got a picture of the lamp? That's the way you make a facsimile. So, an individual who resists the best universe real hard winds up first with a particularized facsimile of lamps and scenes, and winds up with a completely unparticularized facsimile of the MS universe, which is, guess what? Solid blackness. Because it's a black universe. If you don't believe it's a black universe, get out there beyond the bounds of the air on this planet and take a look. That's about the blackest black you'll ever run into. You see that? All right, if he is depending upon the messed universe to furnish him light and to furnish him darkness and to furnish him the space he's going to move in, particularly furnish him the space he's going to move in, and to be all things to all him, he'll wind up eventually with no messed universe. Well, let's take the problem of motion. Let's go into that very particularly. The problem of motion. And the problem of motion is as follows. We're going to move this ashtray from this position on the desk over to this position on the desk. Now, how to get over there? In order to be a part of this universe and a partner to this universe, you have to know something which you've forgotten you know. Well, you had to forget you knew it, otherwise you wouldn't be able to perceive this and become an effect to it. Now, what's this thing you have to know? You have to know how to mock up and unmock things at the speed of light. The speed of light is 186,000 miles per second, which is how fast a particle travels. If you're in agreement with energy, this makes sense. If you're not in agreement with energy, it doesn't make sense at all. because there's no sense to it except you put it there. All right, how do you get it across there, then, if you're in agreement with energy? All right, we started at position A here, and we have to unmark it, then mark it up, and then unmark it, and mark it up, and mark it, unmark, mark, unmark. See? We have to unmark it in this old place, and mark it up in the new place, and unmark it here, and mark it up here, and unmark it here, and mark it up here, and unmark it there, and mark it up there, and unmark it there, and mark it up there, and unmark it there, and mark it up there, and unmark it there, and mark it up there. Now, when you try this to mark and unmark, mark and unmark, mark and unmark, a markup, don't be surprised if it all of a sudden gets solid. You say, no, I don't want a green hat. Right there. No, no, not for all time. And you'll struggle around as to how to unmark the thing. And you won't quite know how to unmark it. Well, there's ways of unmarking it. You just move it around a couple of times and it'll disappear. Because it unmarks itself. Now, why is this moving postulus? Why does that make things disappear? Well, it's very simple. You put this big heavy mass out there and start moving it around and it disappears. Huh. It's interesting, isn't it? You put a mass out and you start moving it. Now, when I say move something, I do mean move. Now, this is moving an ashtray. It's in a number of consecutive positions. All right, now let's take another problem and let's materialize the ashtray as completely different than move it. Now, we'll have the ashtray appear here and then appear over here without being through the consecutive positions. That's materializing something. Now, most of your pre-clears, when you ask them to move things around, will put something in front of them and something behind them and something to the right and something to the left and so forth, and they will merely unmark and mark something up. They will materialize things. They won't move them. Now, when you tell them to move a markup or move a symbol, you mean just that. You mean move this symbol from position A through A prime and A prime prime and A prime 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 and A prime 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 until they get over there to B. You want it to go through all those consecutive positions and see it the whole way. You'll find out sooner or later they'll skip on this. Well, this is forcing them to chew into their automatic machinery, which is actually, for our theoretical purposes, putting this universe here. You see that? For theoretical purposes, we'll consider it this way. You don't have to be hung with this postulate, because every once in a while it'll make you awfully groggy. You won't like this postulate. The best thing to do if you don't like this is to hold on to two back anchor points of the room, go around, kick the walls for a while, and you get over it very happily. That reassures you that your automaticity is still working. Anyway, so in order to move something, however, we've got to form new consecutive spaces. We have to form new spaces. This is the modus operandi of motion. Actually, we don't give a damn about motion or forms or objects because they all come out of the subject of knowingness. If you know they're there, they're there. If you don't know they're there, they're not there. We don't really have to go into any deeper anatomy than this. If you'll just recall that while you're trying to steer your way through this morass of data, why, you'll be a lot happier. If you know it's there, it's there. How do you get a markup out there? Well, you know it's there, so it's there. And then you'll get in some pre-clear, he can't get a markup out there because he hadn't got enough energy, and wait a minute, he'll have to grab some more energy from someplace else. He'll scratch some energy together in order to get another black markup or something. Just a minute, and I'll find some more black energy around here someplace. And I'll put, oh boy, how involved can you get? Because he has to put the black energy there that is scattered all around so that he can scrape the black energy together so he has found the energy so that he can make a new markup out of the energy he's found, see? This is just silly. Why didn't he just say, all right, there's a black shape out there. How does he know it's there? Because he knows it's there. Well, if he really knows it's there, he can say it. That's the test of knowing it's there. If he knows it's there well enough, he can see it. If he doesn't know it's there well, it isn't well enough, and so forth, he, of course, can't see it. So perception and knowing, unless we want to go into the agreements with the mesh universe and take them apart and do a large degree in auditing, we do have to take apart the agreements which form the mesh universe in order to bail a pre-clear out and return to him some of his powers and abilities. We do have to take it into effect, but we took it into effect exclusively and just left out knowingness about the whole thing, we'd be talking about physics. And we'd be talking about a higher echelon of physics than anybody has ever echeloned. They've tried to fly that high. Sir James Jean, once in a while, used to. And he finally came out with a very significant remark. Well, as near as he could find out, the whole thing began with the explosion of an atom. That's not very high. That takes him as high as the explosion. But he knew it wasn't here, and he could prove it wasn't here, but he could also prove it was here, and so forth. So he just went kind of non-sequitur and dived over sideways and said, well, it all started with the explosion of an atom. And that settled the problem for him. Well, actually, he'd settled no problem at all. Where'd the atom come from, fella? It works. Now, there is a central position, and there is a central creation moment for all creations. And we've called this, the first terminal is prime post unposted. That's where you would depart from, prime post unposted. Which is, of course, a mock-up on prime mover unmoved. All right, now we'll get into the next echelon, and we'll find out that knowingness, and really the anatomy of knowingness itself, would just be the anatomy of consecutive agreements, which keep everybody timed with everybody else, and they're in good time with everybody else or in bad time with everybody else. And you can depart in two directions. Then on auditing, you could say, well, let's get somebody out of agreement so that he can be in agreement on choice, or let somebody get in complete agreement with everything. Well, you'd have that theoretical choice, you see, as an auditor. So let's just take it as a theoretical choice, and let's pull somebody out of agreement and see how he is, and then let's get somebody to really agree very nicely and then see how he is. We find out both these preclears have made a slight advance. We'll do it a little bit longer, and we'll just work on somebody to pull him out of agreement just a little bit further. See? A little bit further. And we'll push somebody in agreement about the universe just a little bit deeper. The fellow's been pushed into agreement a little bit deeper. Will all of a sudden start caving in? Make curious. And the fellow who's been pulled out of agreement will continue to improve. And pulling people out of the agreement channel gives us then almost an unlimited improvement, and pushing them into agreement gives at first a little improvement and then a rapid deterioration of the case. You make this test sometime if you want to, because you know what you're looking at when you do that? You're looking at what reality is. We'll just measure what these fellows laughingly call reality, and we find out the fellow we're pulling out of agreement gets higher and higher reality. And the fellow we're pushing into agreement gets lower and lower reality. Well, that's kind of funny, isn't it? The fellow who's forced to agree with the meshed universe and continues to agree with the meshed universe is, of course, agreeing with a dependency, because this universe is set up as a dependency universe. And so he gets more, has to be more and more dependent upon this universe, because he has to agree that other things exist besides himself and that he doesn't own them. Well, of course, the truth of the matter is nothing exists outside of himself. Unless he set it up to be. Now, we don't go adrift with this. This is not theory that we're reaching for over your head. Someday, you may or may not, and you may or may not right this instant, be tangling horns with the actuality and the fact for this case. That is to say, it may or may not be registering very well, because actually, I've had a fellow hang five, 6 weeks on this mock-unmock system of creation, and all of a sudden happily remember the bracket or some such thing. You know, all of a sudden he remembers, by golly, now wait a minute. Sometimes the case hangs up and we don't do the rest of the bracket. Ooh. He knows that because he's seen it happen, you see. He's read it on an email. Why should we have to do the rest of the bracket? Let's see, if you're just a partner with this universe and it really belongs to everybody else, we'd never have to do a bracket, wouldn't we? Oh, looks like you have to do the bracket in order to keep up with the rest of the agreement. Mm-hmm. Say, you don't suppose that you've got a hand in other people's agreements or something? No, you couldn't do that because you're bad cause if you were that way. You couldn't do that. But he'll sometimes plod around like that for quite a while, and then he'll grab hold of it, and for some reason or other, he feels better. Because the truth of the matter is, the universe you see, you put there. Now, that doesn't mean that for you, the walls might be pink, and for me, they might be purple. And that doesn't mean we'd see anything different. Mestwise. Because you've got something in front of you, or you're in something, like a GE, that has done nothing but specialize in agreement. And you've agreed that he has done nothing but specialize in agreement. And so he sees, and that leaves you, it leaves you a little bit unnecessary to go into such a complete agreement to see. But of course you could just choose to see and you would see. We're not going afield anyplace. We're talking about exteriorization. Get the difference between materializing something and moving something. We have to unmark this and mark it up, and unmark it and mark it up. But the difference is that it's being unmarked and unmarked at the consecutive spaces, which are the distance a particle would travel to make a new space. Particles are always being made in the new spaces right here in this ashtray. If we go into the modus operandi of what we're agreeing to. But the first thing we'd go into is just knowing about it. And we could just know it was there and see it. There wouldn't have to be any particles or mass or weight or anything else in it. See that? But the next thing we'd go into is, well, we wanted somebody else to see it too, so we've got some kind of an agreement we'd better work out with this person. Well, you could enforce your agreement on him just by out-postulating him, you might say. But a couple of guys now see this ashtray. Well, they have to agree how they see the ashtray. And we gradually get out the tremendous chemical, biological bric-a-brac that is kicking all over the place and is so complex, and everybody pretends so hard he has to study in order to know about. Well, for God's sakes, his agreement energy, his own basic energy, has to run back through the whole cockeyed chain to activate it so that he can know. That's real good, isn't it? Well, it's a very funny thing that a little kid who doesn't know any nuclear physics at all can see much better than a nuclear physicist who has studied and knows all about it. Now, if you tally those two data together, this starts to make a little sense. It has nothing to do with the deterioration of the GE. Let's take Fanny Featherbrain, who works at the rather light task of taking dollars away from customers down at the restaurant. And we find out that Fanny is 26 years of age, and her vision is 200-200 or something of the sort, whatever would be a very high vision. And she's just doing fine. She's doing fine. And now let's take Miss Bookworm, who has studied hard and slaved to get there and so forth. Well, she might be in the advertising office across the street, but she's 26. And we compare their visions. Well, of course, one used up her eyes a lot on books and so forth while Fanny Featherbrain wasn't doing this. Well, you say that's got a lot of other angles there that we might test one way, we might test the other way, but isn't it a funny thing that we pick up the whole class of girls who were 26 along with Fanny Featherbrain, and we find out the incidence of eyesight and perception and brightness of the mesh universe is remarkably lower than the whole class of Fanny Featherbrains. Well, we say, well, she read, you see, and these other girls read, and they didn't read in good light, and they didn't watch their diet, or they didn't do something, and there's big lots of explanations and more agreements. Well, let's not avoid, let's just look at the straight fact. These girls who were educated divide into two classes, those who studied in the arts and those who studied in sciences, and we find out that those who studied in the sciences have poorer eyesight than those who studied in the arts. Uh-oh. So we've got the girls who didn't study at all, and the girls who studied in the arts, and the girls who studied in the sciences, and we have a gradient scale of how bright's the mesh universe. Getting real silly, isn't it? We're beginning to look like maybe something else is at work here besides just photons. Well, they had to agree. And they had to agree hard. And they've been agreeing with more doggone modus operandi and less sense than anything you could count. Well, anyway, We get a gradient scale of eyesights here. Now let's take other professions and let's find out who has professionally the worst eyesight. And we find out the nuclear physicist does, isn't that silly? This is queer, isn't it? Well, you don't have to take it as fact. You just go meet some. Go get an optical chart. Go look them over. We find out the fellow who has been studying to agree, in other words, exterior knowingness to self, who has been studying to agree on the particularities, the agreement of the messed universe, and has agreed and agreed and agreed on such fundamentals as how many photons are on the head of a pin or something, and has gone on with chemical year after year after year after year with no other solution than let's look at something. He's been pushing himself right down into the depths in terms of perception. It's getting less and less real to him. And that's all it amounts to, as far as perception goes. Well, that's funny that agreement would go below and invert. But do you know ARC goes down to a certain point and then inverts? And you get below that, the best possible affinity is complete identification. The best possible agreement is an identification of two data. And the best possible communication is from one point to the same point without any wires. So you get entire identification at the bottom of the ARC chain. So ARC has to have some differentiation. And so there's two ends to ARC. One is ARC with differentiation, distance, and the other is ARC with no distance. And when you get ARC with no distance, you get psychosis. And so you can push this down below a certain desirable level. At a certain level, it's social. And below that level, it gets worse and worse, and it caves in. It gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And that's the scale from 4 down on the tone scale. It's a study of the increasing identification of A, R, and C from 4 down. Increasing identification. Actually, you call it less ARC. It's an inverted ARC. You see that? Because the person has agreed that the messed universe is his boss, he has then agreed to have communication forced on him. Because it's the handiest, jim-dandiest, most god-awful thing you ever ran into in terms of communication is the messed universe. It will force communication on you whether you like it or not, if you are a piece of matter. If you're a piece of matter, the messed universe can and does force identification on you. See that? You cannot help but get into that rut and fall off the bridge, you might say, and into the pond if you insist upon the messed universe as an other determinism. The solution to it is not just a banishment of the messed universe. The solution to it is the messed universe is your determinism. Well, when we look at the scale of ARC, we find out that it goes down to a certain point, and that's desirable, and an individual can communicate or change communication and so on. And below this point, we get an enforced identification with the meshed universe. In other words, a big dependency on the meshed universe. It's at that point where the meshed universe becomes the other determinist. The invention of God is a God trick, was an interesting invention for Thetans. But much more interesting is the development of a philosophy which tells you that God owns all the space. That, of course, gives you a total dependency on it. And actually, the individual initially bought this very knowingly as a very neat mechanism for having a universe for a playing field. It's the most obvious automaticity you could possibly lay in. You say, well, all this belongs to somebody else, and we will call him God. You know, and then you'd have a playing field that you wouldn't have to look at all the time. See that? But then when you say the playing field is there and it's victimizing me, and you put a playing field there and you coincided with the other players and other pieces so that you've all got a playing field, you've got a basic agreement on the existence of this symbol called God. Therefore, you've all got a playing field. And that becomes very elementarily simple then, doesn't it? And then you go down the line and it works along fine for a long time, and then you become convinced utterly that it belongs to somebody else. And that it isn't yours, and the moment that you find out it isn't yours, why, you become slightly dead duck. Because it becomes a trap. And the only trap you can be caught in is the trap that you make yourself. All right. So you've got an agreement chain there, and that agreement chain itself is the fixation chain. It's what fixes the idea. Continuous agreement, continuous repetition. In other words, you put more and more mass into something, and sure enough, there's been more and more mass put into this universe. See, it's more and more agreement, so that you all know, that somebody else knows, that you know, that anybody knows, that there is a universe here, and it is called the Mesh Universe, and you're thoroughly agreed on it. Now you start to depend on somebody else's agreement in order to keep the universe there. Well, unfortunately, somebody else's agreement doesn't exist in your bank, except as you put it there. So you depend on somebody else's agreement to put the Mesh Universe there, and you're just going to sit back and ride. Well, at the moment when your dependency comes complete, the universe disappears. Now, the gradient scale of sight, perception, and the whole scale of emoting and effort and thinking and symbols and everything else. In other words, that entire gradient scale starts to fade out at the top and fade out on the way down, as though you were drawing a curtain. If you had at the top here knowingness, then under it lookingness, and then under that emotingness, and under that effortingness, and under that thinkingness, and under that symbolizingness, and under that eatingness and sexingness, so they were all down on this scale all the way down like that, and you drew a curtain from the top down, you would see how a person's perceptions go out. Only it's actually a process of drawing repeatedly more and more curtains from the top down. You see, we draw a fairly transparent one from the top down the moment we set up the automaticity. Now let's draw another one down slowly, which is also transparent, but the two of them together don't add up to any greater transparency. Now we draw a third one, and now we draw a fourth one, and a fifth one, and we're just going on down the line each time, repetitively, and we will eventually wind up without any. First thing that goes is knowingness. That goes totally while there's still some lookingness. Then lookingness goes, and that goes totally, and then below lookingness, emotingness starts to go, and we get effortingness. And when we've got effortingness good and solid, and there's very little above that, why, we go into thinkingness, and boy, are they thinking at that level without looking. They'll sit back and figure for hours whether there's a dog in front of them. Never occurs to them to look and see if there's a dog there. And then they go down into symbols, and symbols are condensed thinking, so you get somebody looking at you very fixedly and saying, well, now, when you said dog, did you really mean dog? Now, according to Krajewski, a dog would mean two different things to two different people. And you say, now look, bud, a dog is a dog is a dog is a dog when I was a little girl, according to Gertrude Stein, so let's roll. So when we have our problems in agreement and disagreement and all of this sort of thing, let's not get so fret up as auditors, for instance, about Mama and about Papa and all the rest of it. Yeah, one guy has a tough break, and another one has a tough break, and so forth. And it isn't on the other basis if you did it all yourself, and you're all to blame, and so on. Just remember that it couldn't happen unless the fellow had a basic automaticity so it could happen. And it's his, and he put it there in full knowingness, and somewhere or other, after the garbage of agreement has been pulled off the top of it to some degree, why, you locate again where this machinery is located. And you locate it in brackets quicker than you locate it on a solo effort. Why? It's simply because you run off so much agreement with brackets. In order for Pop and Mama to fight, he had to have some kind of a basic automaticity about parents fighting, or about people fighting, or Thetans fighting, or something fighting, for this to come in over the top of and him to reactivate. You'll find very often that your preclear is busy shadow boxing over in a corner someplace. Any place he's aberrated, he's doing this, fully convinced that there's somebody else in the corner shadowboxing with him. And that it's a real fight going on. And it's only when it becomes apparent to us as auditors that there isn't any other person there that we begin to doubt the fellow's sanity. But the truth of the matter is he's always in his own corner shadowboxing the whole darn way down the line, until you get him up to a point where he can say universe and there's universe. But there are certain high spots of agreement that you have to take apart as you come up the line in order to let the guy let go, because you can't ask him to let go in a hurry. I'm sorry, he just won't let go in a hurry. He'll let go slowly. And what you want to hit is the minimum number of high spots that make him let go. Of what? Of his total dependency upon, one, the other fellow's universe, two, the mesh universe, and three, his own automatic machinery. And you're trying to make him let go. What points will he let go of? And Scientology, in processing, then becomes a study of the most available points to let go of, which, when let go of, will cause the maximum lift of curtains. See? That's all you're studying. Now, naturally, when you go on and process something too long on any of these lines, that which you validate materializes. So, there's always a peak point for processing something. But it's not very critical, and it shouldn't disturb you very much, because, for instance, you'd have to get a fellow going over something, 50 or 100 hours before he'd materialize it. But sure enough, you can make a fellow materialize match terminals until they haunt him. You go out along the line and you're undoing his case very nicely for a while with match terminals. Then after a while, you're just putting in new agreements. You're agreeing now that there are match terminals. And if you agree about that long enough, you can set somebody up to process himself with match terminals for the next 10 years. Why? Because they're realer than the walls. Well, you can also fix a guy up with processing so that you can validate walls, and I don't know how many thousands of hours you'd have to go this way, but you have to get him to a point of validating walls, and then putting up walls inside the agreed-upon walls and validating those inner walls. And if you did this long enough, you'd have a double-boxed room. That is to say, every room he walked into would have another set of walls. He wouldn't be crazy, you see. I mean, you just build up another agreement. And you could build him up until the inner walls were better than the outer walls. Take you a long time. You'd have to slant your processing in this direction to do it. But it has been done experimentally. If you want to do it experimentally, that's a horse for another you. You learn what you're doing here, and then you can experiment in all different directions. You better learn what's been known those first before we do too much experimentation on the thing, because we have, first and foremost, we want to get some immediate results here, and we're getting some immediate results. Well, how does this all vary and fool around and monkey up and make this problem of exteriorization important? Well, what is exteriorization in the first place? Well, it takes somebody out of a body and puts him 3 feet back of his chair or on the roof or at his office, or you could exteriorize somebody by saying, well, just be in a place where you'd like to be. Where's the place you'd most like to be? Oh, the fellow says, Canada and the Canadian Rockies. You say, okay, you know the exact place where you'd like to be there? The fellow says, oh, yes, fished there many times, the big cliffs. You say, all right, be there. And what do you know? Very often the fellow will just pop, exteriorize me, he'll be there. This is another process of giving him some mass. You understand that? You let him exteriorize from his body to new mass with which he's already familiar and knows exists. See? Another trick of exteriorization. An old one. Very old. Now, that's an easy way to go about it, but a fellow who will exteriorize only that way, you have a big problem with. Why? Because he's sold on mass. If he's sold on mass, he's sold on his own automaticity as being somebody else's automaticity. He's sold on something that is actually his being somebody else's. Anybody who is sold on the problem of needing mass, as contrary to creating mass, is sold on the idea that his automaticity is somebody else's. In other words, he's denied himself. Now, this is theory weaving its treacherous way along the brink of many a cliff. And you could take this material and turn it around the other way and do something weird and strange with it, probably. You could probably get all wrong with it. But a test of the thing is simply this. You take somebody who's exteriorized and you ask them to mock up and unmock something and ask him to do it more and more rapidly. And the next thing you know, he's got the being there. He's got somebody there. You don't like that too well. So have them cut it to pieces and throw it away. Move it around, do something else with it. And it, of course, disintegrate. Now, who's pretty good at this? I haven't told the result. Who's doing a good job of exteriorization these days? Okay, Julia, why don't you be about 3 feet back of your head there? And what's your favorite mock-up? All right, well, let's mock up a cat. Now let's unmock him. Mock him up. Unmock him. Mock him up. And now just continue that process more and more rapidly. What you got there now? Still the same cat. Is he getting more solid or less solid? About the same. What are you omitting about the cat that you aren't marking up and unmarking? Is he really disappearing each time? All right. Now let's throw each cat away and put a new cat in its place. One after the other. You got a pile of old mock-ups. Got that? All right, now make this one you've got right now, make it disappear. Now, a little bit ahead of that, make one appear. Make a cat appear. New place, slightly ahead of that. Difficulty? Oh, I see. I see. All right. Let's just put a post there. All right, let's unmock the post and mock it up a little bit to the right of where it was. Do that okay? All right, unmock it there and mock it up a little further to the right. And unmark it there and mark it up a little bit further to the right. And unmark it there and mark it up a little bit further to the right. Okay. Is this post doing all right now? That's what we're looking for. All right. Now let's unmark it there and mark it up a little bit further to the right again. No, just go ahead and do that till you get a the post actually moving by being marked and unmarked. You getting a nice solid post? Okay. All right, throw it away. Thank you. That's just an example of an SOP 8-0 process. Because, of course, that takes over the markup of the mesh universe and the markup of moving things. It takes over the basic automaticity on it. And it's true. It'll just get solider. Did it get nice and solid there? Yeah, oh, these things get gorgeously solid. Just gorgeous. I mean, you can get a Thetan to get things that look so much better than a real person holy cats, the dickens with these other markups. And now he gets powerful enough so that he can stretch across and influence a couple of other universes. And he's got agreement on his mock-up, and you've got a materialization which you can go into. And there you get materialization in front of the crowd, which they used to do and still do possibly in India. I've seen this done in India as a boy and was quite mystified as to exactly what was occurring because this was actual real materialization. Well, of course, if you can do this sort of thing, the rest of it becomes child's play. I mean, as far as handling people is concerned and doing things like that, if you want to make slaves out of them. But you have to make a slave out of a person to some degree if you're going to control him by showing him signs and wonders. And showing people signs and wonders is done more or less in this fashion. That's a little bit off in theory, but there we just had the example of putting the ashtray from A to B on the communication line, you know, just marking it up and unmarking it. Now, that's a standard exercise for 8-0. That is how a fellow gets good, solid, big, handsome mock-ups. Now, another manifestation you run into is just marking up and unmarking and marking up and unmarking in one place. All of a sudden, you'll kick the machine to pieces. The moment you kick the machine to pieces, it'll set up some sort of an automaticity where it'll start marking up everything solid, and all of a sudden you'll get things just hung up solid, and we were already hitting it there a little bit with the cat, so we were kicking the cat, because the cat started to do something funny. started to go out a little bit under control. Well, that's typical, but that's just the machine. Now, the only reason you're doing this is to kick out the automatic machine which mocks up the mesh universe. Now, you've obviously got to have one in these many parts. One that mocks up the mesh universe for you, one that mocks up the mesh universe for somebody else, for himself. One that mocks up the mesh universe of somebody else for you. Yours that mocks up the mesh universe for somebody else, and the machinery belongs to somebody else that mocks up the mesh universe for somebody else and for others. In other words, the parts of the bracket have to be in that machine in order to get a materialization which is visible across the boards. And this is why we fool around with this. And every time we start running brackets, we're kicking that automatic machine. Any bracket you run will kick the machine. If you just ran idle brackets, that is to say, no deeper significance than, all right, now, for yourself. What for yourself, the free throw say? Well, the hell with what? Just for yourself. And, okay, and now get somebody else there. All right, for him. Yeah, but what for him? No, just for him. Now, somebody else for somebody else. Okay. Now, somebody else for you. Okay, and what am I supposed to be getting from you? Doesn't matter. Do I put something there? Well, if you want to. Well, the fellow finally just run a bracket as a bracket, and the next thing you know, his brackets and his mock-ups will start having funny things happen to him. You'll start into this automaticity, you see. You'll start into the automaticity that puts things there for you in three universes. And the second that you start kicking this automaticity, that case, by the way, doesn't deteriorate the way you'd think it would. You'd think it would just kind of go to pieces and sink in. No, the person gets to feeling better and better, but stranger and stranger things are happening. Right? And he gets to feeling better and better. Well, you just carry it through, and all of a sudden, in 8-0, you may, but you don't have to, get up to the position where, for a little while, the fellow will be laying down the mesh universe so he can look at it. Be walking down the street and putting a street there so he can walk on it. And so on. All the while, his body is totally visible to you because you haven't omitted his machine from your mock-up of machinery. You know. That's another's body for you. So you keep on seeing the fellow. But his body can disappear for him simply by kicking out that part of his automaticity. Now we have an automatic mocker and an unmocker there, you see. In order to get this down just pat, so everybody's got time with everybody else's time, we have to get our uniform rate of mock-up, unmock, mock-up, unmock, mock-up, unmock. And that in itself is time. The agreed-upon rate is the speed of light. Give you some idea of your own ability. But a fellow has this idea that all of this is here just for him to embrace. You know, it's all made up and it's his and all that, but of course it's been put there by somebody and it isn't his, and so on, but he's happy to have that, and this is very cheerful, and he'll go along in that state for a very short space of time before it caves in and starts disappearing. And he also feels he's kind of drained and he's unable to create. Well, boy, he's feeding energy out into the mock-up machinery that makes everything around you. He's feeding energy. You would just be fascinated with the amount of energy which leaves you in terms of make-up energy, in terms of knowingness, in terms of old covered-up knowingnesses and agreed-upon channels. Think of the amount of energy that it takes to put up the number of ridges and hold the number of ridges in place which some ridge case is holding up around him. Think of the amount of continuous effort which he has to undergo to have an electronic facsimile pushing his face in. See, and this becomes rather silly. Now, the proof of this theory, and you understand this is a theory. This has no other foundation than its workability. And it is workable. Now, we get somebody and we have him be the various machines and be other ends of the communication line. Now, it's be the mesh universe, now be your body, now be yourself. Now, be yourself, be the mesh universe, be your body. And back and forth, around like this, around like this. Now, let's be the mesh universe doing you a big favor by existing. And be the mesh universe being depended upon by you. If you've done that for a little while, back and forth, all of a sudden this automatic machinery begins to creep. And you get somebody exteriorized. Well, he has the body as a very set, beautiful piece or agreement. And he's picked up its agreements, and he's got it all dovetailed gorgeously, and his body is a very solid contraption. Now, it isn't necessarily in on his line. thought can cross, and knowingness can cross, and therefore individuality can exist, but knowingness can cross without a wavelength. Actual knowingness can cross without a wavelength. That frightens many people. A person will get down pretty low into circuits and that sort of thing, and he'll get unselective mind reading. He walked down the street, and all of a sudden he knows what everybody's thinking about. He's going to go nuts. Well, that, of course, stems from the fact that if it bothers him, he's unwilling to be those other people. And this tells you why he's automatic mind reading. And the other fellow can simply know or not know. It is this thoughtness itself, not beingness itself, which is a communication channel which makes it possible for you to stay in agreement. Nothing more than that is actually necessary in order to stay in agreement. And here's this terrific built-up automaticity that puts the mess universe here and takes it away at the speed of light. Machinery which you evidently are feeding at a mad rate of energy. If you have energy at all, you know you have to have energy, and yet you're feeding energy to all of this. So it's all, oh boy. There's that sun blazing up there, and there's your body sitting there, and oh man, this is this nice, sitting that nice warm sun. Well, no, why don't you put the sun someplace else sometime and bask in it? It's just as simple as that. You can bask in it much better. You can bask in it without ants. You can walk up a lawn without ants. Well, that restores to an individual, to a large degree, his fluidity. Now, to say that the whole track has been in vain would be a falsehood, and that individuals who are passing through this particular phase at this time, all is lost and all of that sort of thing. Any randomity which is built up, which gives an individual a tremendous interchange of knowingness one with another and makes a playground possible and makes a game possible, is very far from lost. You'll go on knowing what you have found out, because what you have found out is the accidental combinations of patterns. And this is tremendously valuable to you. Did you ever see a couple of little kids go out and decide to play a game and then not know any rules or anything, no pattern? They can't get enough in agreement with each other to have any kind of a game. So we're not just trying to wipe out a game. The truth of the matter is that it is not all lost, and your travail is not for nothing and all that sort of thing. But it does work out that you have gone a bit far south on the game, and it ceased to be a game to some degree, because everybody's agreed that it ceases to be. When you ask somebody to exteriorize from himself, then, you aren't asking a being to be anyplace else. Although he knows he is someplace else. But is there a being at that new place? Oh, yes, there's as much being as he ever has been, and probably more than he has been in many cases. There's a being there. There's a being. If a viewpoint is a being. But his viewpoint and his being are synonymous. There isn't something with mass there. Well, now, when an individual has done a tremendous agreement upon the existence of terminals, and interchange of energies and masses, and the need of masses, and he has to have two big masses rigged up so they'll interchange, and he's fooling himself to the point where he doesn't put in the interchange between these two masses so he can have energy and not watch himself do it, you see. When he's going through all of this stuff, well, at the first moment that he came into this universe, you might say, first moment when he set up his agreement with this universe, he experienced a certain degradation, of course, because he set up another determinism which was so much more powerful than himself that he never could solve it, he figured. Science is a hectic game called Find the Rules. And they weren't succeeding too well, yet life itself has succeeded when we can pull it out of a hat like this. But don't succeed so well that you don't set up another game. Here we have the fellow exteriorized, though. What are we trying to do? We're trying to give him another viewpoint, another place to look from, another place to know from, and a choice of where to know from, which does not entirely depend upon a body. Well, why can't you get the same effect inside a body? Well, when he's inside the body, he's already depending upon something. You just kick him out and say, depend on yourself, guy. All right, so exteriorization is the single biggest jump that we can make. We say, all right, let you set it up. Instead of you setting it up via all the agreements to which the body is subject, let's just you set it up. And the fellow has to and does set it up without all the bric-a-brac machinery, and he can still keep the bric-a-brac machinery parked to one side. So therefore, a fellow can let go of an awful lot as an exteriorized being, that is, a being who is communicating without the system and agreement of the mess body. See? He can let go of a lot. He can unmake a lot of automaticity. He can get himself beautifully squared around in all directions without immediately tearing down all of his ownership and investment in the game. Because remember, he has an investment in the game. That is more than havingness. Investment in the game is fun, randomity, action, drama, so on. It's only when the drama has run out that the worry runs in. Now, as a matter of fact, a couple of soldiers sitting in a foxhole in the mud, starving to death and shooting people all over the place and being shot up and bombed and so forth. You read a lot in the storybooks about how they feel that actually at a moment of action of this character, they don't feel there, because anything is justified. Any drama, any speech, any action, any gesture is entirely justified. They've got drama. And they don't sit there and ask many questions. Unfortunately, books about soldiers are seldom written by soldiers. And soldiers don't write. Take Eisenhower, for instance. Anyway, we have a large problem in getting somebody exteriorized, only where we have a large problem in two things, one agreement and the other terminals or masses. We say terminals, we say masses. Or we have a tremendous dependency on masses or tremendous dependency on agreements, we have a problem in exteriorization. The fellow can be any place. He is not a character of mass. As long as he thinks he has mass, he'll go all through all sorts of degradations and so forth. So we get the basic theory that goes behind immediately how he puts the universe together and what he's doing in that head in the first place. Well, a lot of incident comes later than all of his agreements, and so we have a tremendous incident pattern. You get this incident chain, he's got 76 trillion years or something on that order of agreements and patterns and things that he can fall back on, overlying the top of an automaticity from the moment since he built the playing field, you might say. And you'll have two fellows going around, he'll argue this way, I built the mesh universe, one says. And the other one says, no, I didn't, you didn't, I did. And I know, we ran it on the E-meter, and I know I did. Well, the truth of the matter is, they both did. The only mesh universe you see is the universe which you put there. But it's in such a beautiful, tight package of agreement that it obviously is there, and you can count on it being there for a heck of a long time. But it's your universe. Now, the person has been disenfranchised who can't see this universe well and who isn't perceiving well and doesn't exteriorize well. He's been disenfranchised, you get that. Part of his agreement is that it isn't his. See, to such a degree that he can't see it. Now, if you can get somebody to own an object, to warm it up with his own, quote, body heat, unquote, to pet it, to carry it around for some days, take a pebble, and have him concentrate on owning it. Even though this person never before got a picture, a facsimile, a mock-up, or anything, he thereafter will be able to get the most beautiful picture of that pebble any time he wants it, any place he wants to put it. It's on ownership. And if you can make some pre-clear, simply look up and take ownership on an object, or take ownership of the world around them, they will then be able to close their eyes and see it. Not a facsimile of it, they'll be able to see it. There are certain things expected of a body, and a body has certain frailties. But it's holding space apart merely because the thetan agrees it holds space apart. It keeps things stabilized. Now, many a thetan exteriorizes, gets 3 feet back of his head, and has the whole room go out of shape. You know, it gets narrower than it is long, and the anchor points start to wobble off like a parallelogram collapsing. And the anchor points get pretty shaky and so forth. You exteriorized him outside of where he had concentrated his automaticity for perception. And now he's outside of this place, and he hasn't got his automaticity concentrated at that place anymore, and he isn't yet aware of the fact that he has to set it up in order for it to be straight. So he keeps sitting outside the body, pretending he's still sitting in the body, you know, kind of. He's still got a body agreement to a level where he expects something else, or not even a body agreement, he's got a mesh universe, where he very much expects something else to hold the anchor point straight. The only thing that'll ever hold the anchor point straight is himself. So you just train him in holding anchor point straight, and all of a sudden the mesh universe straightens up. Okay?